Hi, I'm Tej Singh, and welcome to Office Hours with Dorm Room Fund, where we interview some of the most successful people in startups, technology, and corporate America. Dorm Room Fund is a student-run venture capital firm backed by First Run Capital. We write seed checks of $20,000 into startups founded by fellow students. Since our founding in 2014, we've funded over 275 startups, which are now collectively worth over $1 billion and have gone on to raise over $500 million in follow-on funding from Sequoia, Andreessen Horowitz, Excel, and others. To pitch us, go to dormroomfund.com. Enjoy this episode. Hi, I'm Tej Singh, and I'm joined by Rachel Blumenthal, the co-founder and CEO of Rockets of Awesome. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the company.
So Rockets of Awesome is a vertical kids apparel brand. So we design and manufacture all of our own product under the Rockets of Awesome label for boys and girls sizes 2 to 14. And really the idea was to design really stylish, high quality kids clothes and deliver it at a very accessible price point. So our prices range $16 to $38, with outerwear being slightly higher. And the idea is that customers can really get styles that both parents and kids really love. We sell our clothes primarily direct to consumer, but we are starting to branch out to be more omni-channel. We have a e-commerce business, a subscription business. We now have a store on Fifth Avenue in New York City in Flatiron, and we're starting to build out select wholesale partners.
Yeah, I saw it has a foam pit in the middle or something like
that.
It has
a marshmallow pool okay. In the middle of the store. Yeah, so it's a very immersive and interactive experience.
So do you make your own clothes?
We do. We design all of our clothes in our New York City office, and we make all of them for our customers.
Was that a challenge figuring out the supply chain?
You know, I think supply chains can be very complicated. There's certainly a lot of work, but I had built a jewelry company prior for which we were also vertical. And so I knew a lot about the supply chain, but, you know, really at the beginning, what we did was that we hired experts who had been in children's wear, who had the factory relationship so that we could make the clothes.
Can you talk about how you use data? So, for example, seeing what items parents return and what they keep to inform decisions on the following season's clothes?
Yeah, so, you know, I think like most digital-first businesses that are direct-to-consumer, data is super important to everything that we do. You know, first and foremost, it's about delivering the best customer experience to all of our customers. So making sure that the information that we're collecting, we're really feeding back into our system so that we can make sure that the products that they see on the website, the products that we show them in different retail stores and so on are right for that consumer. We do have a subscription offering for which our customers fill out a quiz. They tell us what their kids like and dislike. And with that information, we're able to personalize an assortment. So no two boxes are the same. They truly are personalized, and every box continues to get better based on the data we're collecting about what they keep, what they return, the feedback they give us.
Tell us about how you came up with the idea.
I'm a parent, so I have two kids. They're 4 and 8, and I had a 4-year-old at the time, was pregnant with my daughter when I came up with the idea for Rockets of Awesome, and it was really a personal pain point of not having the time and being really frustrated with trying to find really cool clothes that weren't expensive and wanting to serve a customer that really cared about style and quality but didn't want to spend $45 on a sweatshirt when their kids were going to outgrow it in a week.
I think it's amazing how you have other fellow moms as investors like Gwyneth Paltrow and Serena Williams. Talk about how you got in touch with them.
So, you know, I think one of the most important things about being an entrepreneur is building relationships. And so I've spent basically my entire career building relationships. And, you know, you never know where those are going to take you. I think that the best relationships are those built without necessarily wanting or needing something in that moment. But, you know, Kirsten Green from Forerunner Ventures is a longtime investor, also a mom. She invested in my previous business. And, you know, that was really driven by building a relationship and building trust and wanting to work together. But Serena and Gwyneth, I was introduced to through mutual connections. And, you know, as parents, I think they both felt personally connected and interested in what we were doing and felt as though they really understood the opportunity in the market.
So let's rewind a little bit. Tell us about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and we didn't get a Gap until I was probably about 10 years old. And so I spent much of my early years and even my teen years shopping at Filene's Basement and Marshalls and TJ Maxx with my mom. And I really sort of built a skill around finding the cool clothes that, you know, were sort of these high-end brands, but were very inexpensive. So, you know, I certainly have always loved fashion. I love sort of the joy of the find. But as a parent, what I realize is that you don't necessarily have the time to spend to be digging around trying to find sort of the diamond in the rough, which was part of the reason that I was inspired to start Rockets.
Back when you were a child, can you think of any interesting things you did? So are there any funny stories your family likes to tell about you?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I was a competitive figure skater. And there was a dress that I had seen in Vogue magazine that I decided had to be the dress I was going to wear for my skating competition that year. And in magazines, they basically have little words on the side of the page that say, you know, what brand the dress was and how much does it cost and where you buy it. And for this particular dress, it said Stylosone. And, you know, for this like 14-year-old, that was an unacceptable answer. And I proceeded to call every single editor in the masthead of Vogue magazine in search of finding out where I could buy this dress. I was not successful. It was a vintage piece that the stylist had sort of found somewhere. You couldn't purchase it. And so instead, I found a dressmaker in our town and creative directed her on recreating it for my competition.
Have you watched I, Tonya?
I have.
I also watched, I haven't watched that, but I watched The Politician with Gwyneth Paltrow. That was a really good TV series. Are there any shows or movies you like to watch?
Oh, God. Let's see. I just binge watched The Morning Show with Reese and Jennifer Aniston, and that was incredible. What else? I love Homeland. I love Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I don't know. I kind of sort of like jump all over the place. I'm very, very impressed by Gwyneth's new show with Netflix called Goop Lab. I think that it's such an incredible approach to TV. And I love the way they've been able to talk about topics that are either taboo or unfamiliar and doing it in a way of both combining expert information combined with personal stories.
What about any movies?
Movies. Who the hell has time to go to a movie?
Yeah.
When you have children, you don't go to movies anymore. I watch movies on airplanes. I don't know. Movie. I can't think of a good movie I've watched recently, to be honest.
I'm excited for Homeland's new season, which comes out next Friday.
I'm so excited. So excited.
The last season, where did it leave off? Was it in Russia, right? Where she got stuck, I think.
Was it
Ireland? I forget.
Carrie Matheson. I can't wait for her to be back.
Yeah. Did you get in trouble a lot as a child?
No, I was like the good kid. I was like the goody two shoes.
Did you have a nickname?
My dad called me Scooch, which doesn't really mean anything, but he called me Scooch. And when I was 10, I started this like side hustle of a business where I basically convinced my brother, who was 3 years younger, so he was 7, to dress up like a clown and make balloon animals. And I would essentially like rent him out for birthday parties in town. So that was maybe one of my first entrepreneurial ventures.
Yeah, entrepreneur at heart.
Yeah.
What did you think your life would be like when you were older?
I always expected that I would climb the ladder of a corporate organization, go to business school, and run somebody else's company someday. It never occurred to me that I would ever start my own business and run my own company. And, you know, I think that the way that I sort of got into becoming an entrepreneur was very natural. It was quite organic and wasn't on purpose. I designed a ring. I was working at Yves Saint Laurent at the time, and so I was working with magazine editors every day, and I designed a ring and was wearing it at work, and editors from Lucky Magazine saw it and decided to feature me as a new designer, and I just sort of went with it, and I really sort of said, all right, well, this is funny and haha, but let's see where this goes, and Lucky Magazine turned into Daily Candy featuring me. Back then, 2003, Daily Candy was the only major media platform for women, and they would announce sort of the only product you needed to know that day, and Daily Candy featured me and really put us on the map. I started doing trunk shows at Henri Bendel. Shopbop picked me up as one of their first jewelry designers. Bergdorf Goodman picked me up, and sort of as it was going, in the early days, it was really about mitigating risk. It was really about seeing that people were interested in what I was making, being able to start to understand what a supply chain looked like, doing some sales and PR myself, to a point that I was comfortable enough to leave my job and set up shop in my living room and figure out how I was going to make it work. And, you know, that was a business that I built and ran over the course of 8 years. We were in about 500 retailers worldwide. We did private label for American Eagle, Target, J. Crew, and a number of others. And, you know, it was sort of a baby steps business where we never raised capital. We were always profitable. I had, you know, very few employees in the beginning. And even, you know, at the height of the business, probably didn't have more than 10 or 12 employees. But it was an extremely profitable business, and it was one that was built sort of around my comfort of the entrepreneur that I was at that point and sort of being comfortable with that idea of running a business. Back then, it wasn't a startup, you weren't an entrepreneur, it was sort of a small business. And that has really sort of helped me become comfortable and sort of find my way in building future companies at different scales.
So you worked at YSL after Tufts, right?
Yes.
What'd you do in college? What'd you major in? Any activities, extracurricular activities you did?
Economics and political science. It was the closest I could get to something that felt entrepreneurial or business oriented. There was not a business program there at the time. And no extracurriculars. I was in a sorority.
What's your favorite class you took?
Oh God. My senior year, they started an entrepreneurship program. And that was the first time that I was like, oh, this is amazing. Because I just, you know, I think that the curriculum at a liberal arts school, a traditional liberal arts school, was, it was very theoretical. And I'm something that someone have probably, if I'd given the opportunity, I would have gone straight into the workforce. Like, I just really wanted to work and do things and learn in a very tangible way. So I did a lot of internships and just tried to put myself out there as much as possible to understand what the opportunities were.
Where did you intern?
I interned at AOL Time Warner, at 17 Magazine, in the Senate. I was actually a Senate page for Senator Kennedy. So, sort of a little bit all over the map. But fashion was sort of the experience that I was like, oh, this is amazing. This could be a real job. I can't believe that.
What was Senator Kennedy like?
Beyond impressive. He was such a professional in respect to really caring about his constituents and wanting to, you know, sort of create the greatest opportunities for them. And I mean, talk about somebody who could just get up and speak on behalf of his constituents in a way that really compelled you to pay attention.
What'd you do?
As a Senate page, it was crazy. You basically sit on the Senate floor all day and you wait around for, you know, anything that the senators need. You know, I think that we were so fortunate to have visibility into how the political process worked. I got to work in his office. We were actually there during the inauguration of Bill Clinton. And I carried the ballot box during the joint session with the Senate and the House, which was pretty cool. My parents got to see it on C-SPAN.
What was 17 Magazine like? Was it like Blair Waldorf when she interned at W?
It wasn't sort of as drama or cutthroat as you would maybe think it would be. It was women who were really passionate about creating great content. I was actually on the merchandising side and the marketing side. So I was thinking about how do we actually position the editors to be sort of faces of the brand, so that readers really connected with these editors and wanted to follow the content that they were creating.
What's been the biggest influence, or who's been the biggest influence in your life?
That's a great question. I think that my mom has been a huge influence. You know, I grew up where she didn't work in the early days of me going to school and worked sort of later on when I was in high school and college, but she was always somebody that really advocated for herself. And so, you know, I remember just listening to her on the phone with different companies, whether it was a hotel or an airline or a restaurant. And she really advocated for what her goal was. And I think about it a lot now with my children because we're rarely on the phone with people, right? We do a lot on the internet. And they don't get to hear me negotiate. They don't get to hear me advocate for my goals. And I think I learned so much about having that confidence in yourself and the tone to take with people to convince them to have something go your way.
I'm sure there's been many, but what's one lesson you've learned in life?
I think so much of what I've learned in my career is around really taking advantages of opportunities that come your way. And, you know, at this point, I say no to much more than I say yes to, but I'm a really curious person. And I think that the curiosity ensures that I know what are all my options presented to me for which I can make the decision of the one that is right. And, you know, I can think of so many opportunities, whether it was, you know, my friend that worked at Lucky Magazine that wanted to feature me as an up-and-coming designer when I had made one ring ever in my life, to, you know, a random banker calling me and saying that, you know, the CFO of a major public company wants to talk to me about something. You know, those are opportunities that seem outrageous. They don't seem like they fit into your plan. You don't sort of know exactly what that path is going to take you. But I really pride myself on being able to assess opportunities and being open to hearing about them.
Has there been a book that's influenced you in your life?
Yes. Young Mi Moon, who is a really sought after and acclaimed NBA professor at Harvard, wrote a book called Different. And what she writes about is the critical importance of being different when building a brand, the importance of really standing out among everybody else. You know, when everyone's going left, go as far right as possible. And, you know, she cites a lot of examples of traditional companies like toothpaste companies and cleaning products and things like that. But, you know, it's something that I've always really believed in. And I think more than anything, the reason that I have loved her book is that it really has validated a lot of what I believe in, but also been a great reminder for why it's so important to be different. And it's a tool that I share with my team quite often.
What's an unusual habit or an absurd thing that you love?
Oh, God. Unusual habit. I'm sure I have a million of them. I don't know.
Or here's a more interesting question. If you had $10 million, what would you spend it on other than donating it and or putting it back into Rockets for Awesome?
I mean, I used to dream when I was little that I would get like locked inside Bloomingdale's and somebody would give me, like, remember that show Supermarket Sweep? I used to dream about being in Supermarket Sweep, but in Bloomingdale's, and you would give me like $1 million and I had to spend it within, you know, a set period of time. So I think that question definitely brings me back to like how I used to think about it as a kid.
In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Having kids, and probably first and foremost having kids, but also building a business, I've really taught myself how to give myself a break. And this is coming from somebody that is sort of like crazy type A, over deliver type person, where, you know, I never wanted to accept that you couldn't have it all. And I finally understand why people say that, you know, you can't have it all, but that doesn't mean that you can't have the things that are important to you. And so, you know, I've been able to give myself a break by thinking about it that way. So for instance, you know, my babysitter called me last week and she said, I'm at Hebrew school to pick up Griffin, but he's not here. And I was like, oh, sorry, I forgot to tell you I picked him up early. And, you know, 5 years ago, I would have been sort of distraught in the fact that, like, how could I have been such a flake? And how could I have screwed up so bad? And I can't believe I wasn't on top of it. And in those moments where I can actually be proud of myself for letting myself have a break that I just don't care, is a big accomplishment for me.
So I read in an interview that you like to read to your son at night. What particular books does he enjoy?
So I like to sit with him while he reads to me now. So he's learning how to read, and he's actually reading in Spanish as well. And he's very into Harry Potter right now, which I was never particularly interested in. But now that he's really into it, he has gotten me into it. So it's something fun that we can do together.
Has he read the Geronimo Stilton, Magic Treehouse? Or I like Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys.
Not yet. I think Hardy, he's like about ready for Hardy Boys.
Those were such good books.
Yeah, it's funny. Someone once gave my husband and I advice that we should actually expose our kids to TV shows and movies from the 80s and 90s, because the language is much less profane than the movies now. And more than that, it's actually the way that the kids treat adults. The level of respect is very different in those shows and movies. Whereas like every kid's like kids show now, they're always like rolling their eyes at adults, and the adults are such losers, and like they make noises like, ugh, for which my son makes that noise every single day and it makes me crazy. So we really got him into MacGyver, and I've gotten my daughter into the Brady Bunch. And they both have sort of like great values and stories in them.
How do you like to get your news?
I mostly get it through Instagram. I'm obsessed with the New York Times Daily. I listen to it religiously. I also have like a number of sort of news correspondents that I follow on Instagram.
What other podcasts are you a fan of?
Let's see. I just started listening to Slow Burn, which I'm really into.
What's that about?
It's sort of like a deep dive into sort of a historical moment in time. So we just listened to one about Monica Lewinsky. There was one about who's the rapper in LA that was shot like in the 90s?
Tupac.
Yeah, this was like a whole thing on Tupac. So sort of these like deep dives, and there's a number of sort of episodes in each of them. I've listened to every single one of How I Built This.
What's your favorite, or what are some of your favorites?
I don't know. I think it's hard to say as an entrepreneur, because part of me is always like, no, but like tell the real story. Because for the most part, they're like part of the real story, but they're very sugar-coated, particularly if you know the people that have done them. So I really want someone to be like, but no, like tell me actually what happened. It wasn't that perfect, because anyone who builds businesses knows that it's really hard and it's never perfect, and the challenges are way bumpier and sort of complex than they are often presented in stories.
Have any of your friends been on the show?
Yeah, my husband's been on the show.
What was it? So I saw an Instagram story of Guy Raz showing like the taping process, and apparently it's a long, like it's like 3 or so hours, and then they cut it down to make it look it fit
really
into
tight.
An hour. Yeah.
Did oh, you? That's interesting. I never asked him actually.
So talk about what was it like in the early days of Warby? What'd you do to help out? Any interesting stories?
I mean, I think the coolest, so Neil and I met when we were undergrads in college. So we've known each other a very long time. We got married the week before business school started. So I was there from the beginning. I was running my jewelry company at the time, so I would spend 3 days in New York and then 4 days in Philly. So I very much felt a part of sort of the Wharton community. And, you know, Neil and the guys met very, very early on freshman year or their first year, and automatically connected with each other. You know, they were truly best friends and, you know, had this idea. And, you know, I think more than anything, what I always really respected with them was how passionate they were about it and how diligent and thoughtful they were about sort of every last step. They really sort of went to the nth degree to analyze and assess and sort of do surveys and focus groups and things like that. I mean, I think some of the coolest things is that they, you know, they hired their first few employees from Craigslist, and they're still employees at Warby Parker today, nearly 10 years later. You know, those employees are like family to us. They worked on our couch in our living room in Philly. I remember when the first shipment arrived in our apartment, and, you know, it was like piled up to the ceiling, and we lived in a loft, so the ceilings were very high. And I was like, you guys are so screwed. Like, what are you going to do? And they sold that inventory in like the first day or two of business. So, you know, when they did that, they, you know, put on their war paint and they sat at a counter and they responded to every single last, you know, email from customers. And they didn't just say, we're so sorry your order's delayed. Like, it'll get to you in, you know, 3 months. They wrote these very long, heartfelt emails saying, you know, how much they wanted to serve the customer and get the product to them, and what they were going to do to be able to help them. And it was just, you know, a really a product and a service and an offering that they were incredibly passionate about, that, you know, Neil had worked in nonprofit for 5 years prior in the eyewear space, and so knew a tremendous amount about the industry. You know, he had never designed glasses necessarily before, but he knew a lot about it. And it was just such a great collaboration of four best friends.
And let's end with, what's one advice you would give to our audience, smart, driven college students, about their, you know, about how they would, or how they should enter the quote-unquote real world? What should they ignore?
Oh, ignore?
So is there common advice that people say that, you know, you think is overhyped? And then also, you know, what is your actual advice for them?
So my advice is to get as much experience as possible. So do as many internships as possible, even if they're free internships or, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, like just as much experience as possible. Meet with and talk to as many people in sort of areas of interest, and, you know, don't be afraid to ask the questions that sound stupid, because, you know, everyone has these sort of glorified titles that nobody actually knows what they mean, even within an organization. So just don't be afraid to ask the questions so that you really understand. But don't overthink it either. You know, get out there, try different things, and really commit to it. You know, put your all into it. Always ask questions. Always share ideas. I think the one thing that a lot of entrepreneurs or sort of people who are building businesses are always advised to do is to create an advisory board. And I typically think that that is a terrible idea, because you end up spending all this time trying to get these like big names to be part of this advisory board for which you don't even know what you need them to advise for yet. And instead, it's about building relationships, fostering them, making sure that you're giving as much as you're getting, and building those relationships at the point you have sort of a formalized way that you want to leverage them, being able to strategically and thoughtfully make those requests.
What a great note to end on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.